It's time to head out on the front porch on KFRM. Grab your favorite drink, sit back, relax, and enjoy the conversation on the front porch.
Hi, this is Kyle Bauer. My guest today on the front porch is Dan Thalman. He is the owner and publisher of the Washington County News. But we're not going to be talking about the newspaper business. We're going to be talking about the Keystone Pipeline rupture that was just outside the city of Washington and what he and I can piece together for the story. It is now operational at full tilt. Most of the cleanup has been done. We received a news release from EPA a week or so ago that says the oil recovery operations and Mill Creek restoration near Washington, Kansas is complete. Dan, thanks for being here, and we're going to kind of piece this thing together.
Yeah, no, I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, so it happened on December the 7th, but that was in the evening.
Right.
And I was surprised how, okay, first of all, there's over 500,000 barrels a day going through that line. And the entire spill was around 14,000, I think.
Right, yep.
And yet they were able to detect that at Steel City, Nebraska, which is just like 15 miles north of there.
Right.
And they were able to detect that and shut the line down. I thought, wow.
Yeah, it's all an automated system. And learning about how they react to these sorts of things was kind of an interesting, educational experience for us, because it was kind of out in the middle of nowhere, yet they had detected this leak through their system and had an immediate response from all over the nation. So it was impressive to see how that one event out in the middle of a pasture kicked off everything that happened so quickly.
Well, according to the timeline you put together, at 9:07, the emergency line trip alarm was received, and they shut the pipeline down at 9:08. One thing that surprised me when the pictures came out, it must have just been spraying this, not gigantic geyser, but this mist spray up in the air that drifted with the wind to the south.
Yeah, because there's the setting is that the burst happened right at the edge of a creek, Mill Creek, and it sprayed upward, and there's a steep hill, prairie hill, to the south of there. And when you look at, drone video and that sort of thing, it's fairly evident. They wouldn't say immediately what happened, but it was fairly evident that there is a pop and a spray, and it just sprayed to the south-southwest all along that hill. And so it was black and covered. The thick standing oil was more at the base, right around the burst point, but that spray was significant.
I'll lay some things out on our end. So we have an analyst that is on the radio station on KFRM every morning at 10 minutes till 8. And he quoted in part of his analysis, he said, well, crude is up $1.50 a barrel today because the Keystone Pipeline has ruptured about 20 miles south of Steel City, Nebraska. And I said, what? What? It's like, that's just right over there. And so I had some taping to do, so I taped, and then I took off driving that way. Well, he had no idea that it had any emphasis to us,
right?
Whatsoever. Local, yeah. And so I drove up that way, and I kind of knew where the pipeline went because I knew where it came through Clay County.
Yep.
And so I went over to Greenleaf and went into to Greenleaf. And I, to be honest, I went by the post office because I figured, well, there'll be somebody there and they kind of know. And they said, yeah, it's somewhere north of here. It's you can smell it like mad in the city of Washington.
Yep.
And so now it was misting that morning.
Mm-hmm.
So I was a little concerned about getting on roads that weren't all weather roads. Because I'm enough of a farmer to know you don't drive just anywhere. So then I drove up into Washington and stopped at the shortstop.
Yep.
And went in there, and there were some retired farmers sitting at a table. Oh, and when I got out of the car, though, truck, you could just smell crude oil.
Yep.
Like mad in the city of Washington. And so I asked those guys, I said, where I hear the pipeline blew up. And I said, yeah, it must be northeast air. You can just smell it all over town. The wind's in the northeast.
Yeah, I came in that morning to work coming north on Highway 15. And I'd say about a mile south of Washington, I started smelling something in my truck. And I was like, well, that's weird. And it was bad enough, I turned off my vent. Because I had no idea what it was. It was in living in an agricultural area, we have different smells once in a while, but we kind of know what they are. And this one was really different, very chemically smelling. It wasn't so obnoxious that I was like worried or anything, but it was something that was noticeable, absolutely.
Well, and if you're in a part of Kansas that's in the oil patch, you'd recognize
sure.
that smell.
Yeah.
But Washington, Clay County, well, all the counties that the Keystone Pipeline
yep.
goes through, we don't have oil.
Yeah.
So we don't recognize
no
the smell of crude,
was.
Right?
Yeah. And so I pulled into town and got to the office, and that's when we started hearing some rumblings of what was going on. And that's when the life of a newspaper guy began, because it's like, well, we got to figure this out real quick.
Well, so I asked the guys, I said, well, it's got to be northeast of town. And I said, well, I don't want to get stuck. And they said, well, the county truck's been running half the night. I think if you'll go north of town to, there's a substation there. There's an all-weather road that goes east toward Hanover. And if you'll go east on that, you can follow the tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll pretty much lead you. And it's like, sure enough, yep. I did exactly what they said. But this is what I thought was amazing. I was there at 9:30 in the morning. Now, we put this out. It cracked or ruptured at 9 o'clock the night before in pitch dark.
Yep.
Now, they were able to, they knew they had a problem, but somebody was able to find the actual leak in the middle of the night, in a moonless night, because it was overcast and misting.
Mm.
Somebody found that in the middle of the night. When I got there at 9:30 the next morning, EPA had a pickup there, and there was two vacuum trucks already backed up to the stream, and we're sucking oil, skimming oil off the
oh, wow.
top of the seam
okay.
by 9:30 next morning. And the county trucks had, now they weren't done, but they had built a heck of a dam by that time also.
Right.
Now,
and they said that was an extremely, extremely important thing that happened. TC Energy continued to compliment the county for that. Basically, it was just a dam to stop the flow of the water. Fortunately, you know, we had the drought conditions and the flow was already really low. And so I'd say, you know, if we were a foot deep, 2 foot deep, and maybe three at some points, it was really low in the creek. And the fact that they put up that dam to stop the flow was huge, because it stopped the oil from going further downstream
in basically the first 3 miles, wasn't
yes.
it? Somewhere I read about
yeah.
3 miles.
Yeah, so it was 3.38 miles of stream is what was affected ultimately. But if the county hadn't swooped in and done that work so quickly, it would have been much further downstream, possibly to the Little Blue.
You know, swooped in is a great word, and you just wonder if somebody had a plan just in case, because they had, I'll say, engineered this culvert that was taking water from way down on the bottom of the stream. So when the dam got full, it didn't have the water run off the top over the dam. It would come off the bottom
right.
and run through this culvert. Now, it's pretty simple, except I'd have never thought
no.
of doing that. And somebody, again, in the middle of the night, first of all, they went and grabbed this tube, dropped it in the stream, and it was at least on a 45 coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And then they started. Now, by the way, for those who don't know, this was a low water bridge. And those in rural Kansas understand that. And that is basically a bridge that is concreted on the bottom. And when the water comes up, you don't drive across it.
Right.
And when but that was where they used then to start constructing this dam. I never did go back. Well, quite honestly, I couldn't go back.
Yeah, and I by the time I was out there, I wasn't allowed to that point in the creek, so I never got to see that.
It still happened
to this day.
I wondered how high that dam eventually got. But
well, they went in and created a second one later, and you know, just with the further engineering process and all of that. So this was the kind of initial reaction, and it was very successful, but they did go back later, TC Energy did, to create a second one that they knew would serve the purpose.
Now, I just don't want to leave this yet, though. Think of this guy. Okay, the alarm went off. They shut down the line. There is some guy that drives out there in the middle of the night, and it's misting, and he starts walking this line trying to find out exactly where this is. Now, he finds the spot, and now he's in the dark. He is trying to figure out just how bad this is, and he sees at that point, I'm guessing, he sees the oil has run down the hill and is in Mill Creek.
Right.
So he obviously, I assume that's a TC Energy guy, because EPA couldn't have come out from Kansas City that fast.
Right.
At that point, he's calling EPA. EPA is calling their contractor, because the tags on the contractor that had those vacuum trucks were Missouri tags. Mm. Now, at this point, it's probably midnight, something like that. But again, by 9:30 the next morning, these guys were already operating. They had floating booms across the creek, and they had these vacuum trucks sucking the oil off the top.
Yeah.
And all that engineering, all those calls, all that happened in the middle of the night.
Yep.
And
not only off of a gravel road, you know, conveniently placed, it was way off the gravel road, off a dirt road, in the middle of a pasture. I mean, it was definitely way out there.
Well, that is Dan Thalman. He is owner and publisher of the Washington County News. Come back after the break, and we're going to talk about what happened next. Welcome back to On the Front Porch. Dan Thalman is my guest today, and he's the owner publisher of the Washington County News. We're talking about the Keystone Pipeline rupture and how that happened, and then how the cleanup happened. Dan, on that morning back, I just happened to find a spot, and I took a couple, five or six pictures, but only posted three on our Facebook page. I didn't think it was that big a deal. In Kansas, we have pipelines rupture all the time. I mean, there's tens of thousands of miles of pipeline across Kansas. And so, you know, we know how to do cleanup. And I didn't think it was that big a deal. And I knew it was in the stream. But the Keystone Pipeline is a big pipeline. And it's gotten a lot of press.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
yeah, so, and that was the thing, too. So I knew right away, as the news guy, this might be something big, but I haven't been familiar with oil pipeline breaks. This was the first one for me in my area. We've dealt with gas pipeline explosions and that, but those we could see, you know, 50-foot tall flames on the horizon. So those are easy to kind of track down. This, I really didn't know how to react. So my first portion is just do a lot of research and figure out what's going on, and then just start talking to people. Of course, the people you want to talk to are already kind of shutting down on what they want to say. Again, that's normal part of the business. But eventually I was able to track down more details. Couldn't really get the how big of a deal was this. You know, is it threatening beyond just that one site? Are we supposed to be concerned as citizens living in the area? I mean, at the very beginning, nobody knew anything about what to expect from this or how to react to it. And so that was kind of day one, was just kind of tracking down information and seeing what a lot of other people. Of course, I publish on a, you know, Wednesday, and of course this happens on a Wednesday night and Thursday. So I kind of said, and I don't use Facebook, so I was just like, well, I guess I'll just have to do a good job at getting the rest of the story complete and full for next week's edition. So it actually allowed me to do a lot of deeper work and try to get some pictures and that sort of thing in preparation for the next week's paper.
Well, and we didn't do really hardly any additional work, because just like you said, everybody shuts down at that point. And those silly pictures that I put on Facebook, I mean, I didn't have any agenda. I just wandered up there, and it's like I took a picture of this, and they ended up in Calgary, they ended up in Scotland, they were in the Chicago paper, New York paper, all over, because those were the only pictures that were out there. But you had local landowners that got you some pictures as well.
Yeah, so when I found out who were the landowners, because I didn't even know that at first, because I didn't know where the actual burst was. And then, so then you get on the hunting app like everyone does and find out who the landowners were and track them down. And they invited me to come out and ride with them out to the site. And so we went with Bill and Chris Panbacker up over their beautiful Prairie Hill there northeast of Washington. And then that's the first moment I saw the result of this burst. And it was impressive. Now, in my mind, the one thing that was, you know how rumors work, we were wondering, was this like Exxon Valdez? Are we going to start seeing oil slicked, you know, squirrels and all this sort of stuff? And have, I mean, when I think of oil spill, that's what I think of. I'm an 80s kid, I guess. And but when I got out there, it was big, but not Exxon Valdez big, you know. So it was a big black mark on the side of this prairie hill. And it seemed fairly evident right from the start that it sprayed up the side of the hill. But then you could tell it was thicker at the bottom and there was standing oil. So we drove a truck up there to the top. I took several pictures up there and then went down in the midst of it. And here I am. And the workers were down there. So we got to see the work they were doing. You could tell pretty quickly that they weren't thrilled that we were there. But being with landowners basically gives you the exclusive opportunity to do whatever the heck we want to do. And I tend to like being local in those situations and saying, hey, we're here and not much you can do about it. We walked down there and I was trudging through the oil and shoes and jeans like you're not supposed to do. And there were some areas that were very thick with oil. And I got what I thought were some pretty nice pictures of the site itself. And I can't wait for when this is all said and done to do the before and afters. But there were some points where I'd say there was oil that probably had to been in wheel rut or path strips that was probably 4 inches deep or something like that. But mostly it was just the traditional pasture grass sprayed with a coat of black. And so if I were trying to give the visual, it was thick, glossy black spray on all the vegetation. And I would say it's a good, 200 feet wide at least on the base area with some runoff of the thick black oil in those ruts. And then the spray, you could just tell. I mean, anyone could look at it and say, obviously, this was sprayed up the hill in a fine mist. And again, just coating all the vegetation with that black. It just looked like it was spray painted.
Well, I tried to determine what PSI it was running at. Did you ever run onto that? I think from best I can do, because at 70%, it was running at 900 PSI. When they started it back up, they had to run it at 70%. So it must have been running about 1,200 PSI. And from what the estimates I saw, was about 14,000 barrels of oil. Well, when you figure that pipeline has over 500,000 and probably upwards of 700,000 barrels a day, to only lose 14,000 is a pretty miraculous number.
Yeah, and the fact that I think they were able to shut it down so quickly automatically is what saved a lot of that flow. Because when they ended up coming back in and determining how much they lost and how much they recovered, they mentioned that this was also from the pipeline itself. So it wasn't all just laying on the ground or in Mill Creek or something like that. They emptied out the entire stretch of pipeline there to get that final figure.
So when you were there, what were you seeing them doing? Were they damming or were they sucking water off or what were they doing?
So at the site itself, so I guess you kind of have to picture the dam is going to be 3.38 miles or right around 4 miles downstream was the dam. We were at the point upstream from that where it was entering the stream. So really, we're only talking less than a eighth of a mile that we could see looking, I guess, westward upstream. Everything else would have been downstream, and we really couldn't see that. The workers that were there, and I can't recall about how many, but there had to have been 15 to 20 within sight pretty easily, were generally walking around just looking at stuff. They were doing something, but I had no idea what they were doing. One did come over and mentioned we shouldn't be there, and I didn't really have a problem telling them we're here no matter what. And they kept on their business, but they were working, doing something, but it wasn't evident what they were actually doing.
You know, when I was there at 9:30 on Thursday morning, their EPA had a pickup there, and these guys were sucking oil off the stream, and the county trucks were running over there building that dam. But there was, didn't appear to be, first of all, it didn't appear to be frantic, mm-hmm. and secondly, it didn't appear to be, there wasn't any, I really was expecting to be run off.
Yep.
And I was going to go until I got run off, but the road was still open, and I was on the road. So, you know, when you're on a public road and it's open, you were just fine. But, oh, by the way, the original estimates on this was $480 million for remediation. I don't know what it cost, but that was what they filed with EPA as the initial remediation cost of $480 million.
Yeah, and they spent a lot of money, but trying to get figures out of them, out of TC Energy specifically, has been a struggle, no matter which way you ask it. But we're in the tens of millions of dollars, even just locally spent. So beyond that, it's hard to say what it would have cost.
The thing is, though, is when you look at $480 million, I mean, that's just an astronomical figure for us. But when they're putting 500,000 barrels a day through it, and if they get paid a dollar a barrel, I'm just making a number up. Mm-hmm. But there's just so many dollars that goes by that. And they basically had that, according to your thing here, they had it back up and restarted by December the 28th. Getting it back up was more important to them than the cost of remediation.
Yeah, they're, you know, you think about it, they have to have that revenue coming in to pay for what was evident to them was going to be a big, costly cleanup. And so, yeah, they ended up getting it restarted December 29th. So you think about that, that's essentially, you know, 3 weeks later from the time that it broke. And that got that oil flowing again and get the revenue going again. But it's tough to go on and try to even give an educated guess on the site, because that site was blocked off by barricades the afternoon after it happened. And at that point, they really cut down on any traffic whatsoever getting out there and seeing it.
That is Dan Thalman. He is the owner and publisher of the Washington County News. And of course, the Keystone Pipeline rupture happened just outside Washington, Kansas. So Dan was kind of the epicenter of information coming out, as hard as it was to get out. Join us after the break, where we're going to talk about more about the remediation of the site. Welcome back to On the Front Porch. My guest today is Dan Thalman. He is the owner and publisher of the Washington County News in Washington, Kansas. Dan, you built the second largest city in Washington County, or they did, within a matter of weeks. The number of people that were out on that remediation site was just mind-boggling.
Absolutely. And it was the central part of the conversation in the community. The intersection for equipment to be hauled out there went right past a convenience store in Washington. So there was plenty of people just kind of sitting, drinking coffee and counting, literally counting semis going by and hauling stuff out there. So we're talking major equipment, machinery, but also just things like putting down what they called rig mats, which was basically, wooden matting, I guess, to create floors out there so that they don't destroy the ground. 33,000 rig mats out there, which is the equivalent of 75 NFL football fields. And then on top of that, they have to start establishing their little city. They had office buildings out there, other administrative buildings, obviously the restrooms and all that sort of thing. But as it went on, it even came to the point of having some sort of catering out there, a coffee trailer out there, and just vehicles everywhere. The entire place was lit up by these huge light structures that were visible on the horizon from Highway 36. It was obvious to everyone in the area that something was going on out there. And it was a 24/7 operation. So by January, it got to the point, I think they peaked, they hit their peak in January, February with personnel on site, and it would be up to 900 people, workers per day out there. In town, that was absolutely obvious that there was something big going on because the traffic was huge, even though we also had traffic in the community from a Highway 36 reconstruction project right there within town. We had a Highway 15 bridge just a mile south of town being reconstructed. And then the construction process for the High Banks Wind project in the western part of Washington County and in Republic County. So we had a lot of activity going on, but it was impossible not to notice the spike. Great for the economy, but just the it was just a marvel to see all the activity going on out there. I was able to see it. I never got to go out there when it was at its peak of personnel, but I got to go out there first in June and see it, and it was still very evident with all the equipment they had out there to do this work that this was unique.
You know, to think about those folks, you know, the minute before that ruptured, none of those people knew that they were going to be in Washington County for the next year.
Yep.
And then they mobilized from God only knows where.
Yep.
And all of a sudden they were in a truck the next day headed that way. Somebody had to build a plan. Somebody had to build a city. And somebody had to make sure the roads would hold up. Now, they did get very, very lucky in that we were in a drought. And we stayed in a drought. If this had been a wet year, it would have been a lot more difficult.
Yeah, and we said that over and over, that if this same exact incident happened in April with a thunderstorm rolling in, just imagine what could have happened. Because that's Mill Creek is like any creek in Kansas, that it might flow, you know, it might be 2 foot deep most of the year. Put a big rainstorm upstream from it, and suddenly it's 6 to 20 foot deep. And if that were to happen, I can't even imagine. But they were real fortunate with that sort of weather. It did get really cold afterwards, and I kind of gave them crap a little bit. This is TC Energy's based out of Canada. I said, how would they not know exactly what to do in cold weather situations? Because some of the cleanup was problematic because of the freezing temperatures, but they were able to experiment and figure out new ways to work on it. But this 900 personnel situation, they came from all over the place. And so when you think oil industry, they're not all just out of Canada. There was a lot from Texas and Louisiana, Arkansas. I mean, it was, I should have got a count from them how many states were actually represented at some point. Because of that 900 people at the peak, they said that as of June, there had been over 3,000 individuals overall who had worked on that site over the initial 6 months. And that doesn't count the offsite support capacity. So during that first 6 months of work, 3,000 individuals coming into Washington County, Kansas, and I guarantee you, 99% of them had never heard of that part of Kansas at all.
Well, and you stop and think about, okay, how do you plan? Let's build a plan so we know, except that if this would have happened a half a mile further north, it would have looked completely different than where it was there. Somebody has to get there and just develop the plan right then.
Yep.
With basically an unlimited checkbook to evaluate the situation. I was surprised, I think it was in your notes, that you said how deep the pipeline was where it ruptured. It was very, very deep there.
Yeah, 25 feet underground at the site of the rupture. This is a 36-inch diameter pipeline, and it goes from the tar sands of western Canada down through is it the Dakotas and then into Nebraska, but it's Nebraska at Steel City where there's a junction, and from there part of the pipeline goes east, and then this Keystone Cushing extension is what it was originally called, goes straight south to Cushing, Oklahoma. And since the construction of this extension, they have extended it down to the refineries in Texas so that it has access to the Gulf. So it's a big system. But yeah, it's deep under there. A lot of us will remember when it was first put in. That was a major effort as well, and quite an economic impact when that came around. Didn't realize that we'd have a second round impact at some point too.
But just to put the for people who've never looked at it on a map and or seen any pictures, it basically was coming down a big hill, going under Mill Creek and going up a big hill on the other side. So it appears that somewhere the line was stressed. Is that a fair way to say it? And it cracked because of that?
Yeah, so that was one of the original discussion points, even with the panbackers. Bill had mentioned, I think wisely so, that when they were putting it in, the way it approaches, it was kind of a general slope towards this point, but the way it approaches it and then suddenly hits this hill, Bill had said that it would been wise to have bored through that hill, because that hill is up and down. I mean, it's not just up and then stays up, it's up and down. So instead of just cutting right through it to the other side, which would have been expensive, they decided to go up that hill and then back down the other side. So just with anyone with any basic knowledge of fluid dynamics, you would think that there's going to be kind of an extra pressure point at that particular junction, which they determined it was, I wouldn't be able to say exactly.
Well, had understood that it was, they put it back to the manufacturer, that there was a weak place in the weld in that pipe, but not the weld of two pipes together, but the seam in the pipe.
Yeah, but you would think that if that's the case, then that location probably would be where it's going to be found out.
Yeah, it was the logistics of this thing that was just staggering to me. Okay, so they, according to this, 14,000 barrels of oil leaked. Well, that's 600,000 gallons. I did the math, okay? And then if you get 6,500 gallons on a truck, that's 90 truckloads of oil that was loaded back up and hauled off. But they had to put a water treatment plant in, and I don't know if then part of that was in this 90 truckloads, or because that water treatment plant generated a lot of water.
Yeah, so again, we'll go back to the second largest city concept in Washington County, and we're about, 2.5-3 miles as the crow flies northeast of town, and or maybe it's 2 to 5, somewhere in there. And the traffic was noticeable every single day for months on end. And so that's bringing stuff in, setting it all up, because it wasn't just trucks and some machinery and people. It was big pieces of infrastructure. This water treatment plant, they did go and do some of the work on that and found out it, while it was operating at capacity, was like the 7th largest water treatment plant in Kansas. So you think of some of the big cities, and we're right behind them. They said it treated 3,600 gallons per minute of water. 54 millions of contaminated surface water was treated and discharged back into the creek. It operated for 3 months and was decommissioned in early summer. You know, and in order to do that, they had to run water through it. So they were emptying out Mill Creek. And one way to do that is to have Mill Creek no longer flow. They ended up putting in 5 pumps upstream from the leak itself, and then had an overland pipeline to bring it from the upstream location to a downstream location past the dam. And so they ended up dewatering that using this 1-mile-long diversion pipe. It was really a sight to behold, all the activity that happened out there.
That is Dan Thalman. He is the owner and publisher of the Washington County News. We're talking about the Keystone Pipeline rupture and the spill mitigation afterwards. Join us after the break for the final segment of On the Front Porch. Welcome back to the final segment of On the Front Porch. I have Dan Thalman, owner and publisher of Washington County News, and we are Monday morning quarterbacking the Keystone Pipeline rupture and remediation and putting our stories together and what we can piece together, because perfectly honestly, I will say this, I won't make Dan say this, but TC Energy really isn't all that interested in visiting about it, and I get that. Fine. It's their... But you can piece it together by different things. And both of us got a news release a week or two ago from EPA that basically said, hey, this thing is wrapping up. So by the calculations, there was 200,000 tons of oil-impacted soil and debris and sediment that was hauled off-site. if you will, dirty soil.
Mm-hmm.
And I calculated that at 25 tons a truckload, that's 8,000 truckloads. Where did that go? Do you have any idea?
Yeah, so it became a little bit of a controversial topic because we know it went up into Nebraska, and then we saw coverage in the adjacent Nebraska newspapers about receiving this contaminated soil. What they were going to do about it, they weren't so thrilled about it, but you know, it is what it is. In the meantime, doing that many trucks on a road that isn't a main highway or anything was problematic for ongoing maintenance and, you know, the future viability of that particular road. I happened to drive it in September just to kind of, I wanted to look and see.
Is that a state highway or a county road?
That would be a county road.
That's what I thought. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it was one of those things where, you know, TC Energy had been very good about paying for their presence and working closely with our county. But this was something that we knew if it wasn't addressed, the ongoing maintenance of this road or the years cut off its lifespan as a result of all this traffic, our taxpayers would end up having to foot a bill for something that they weren't responsible for. So our county commissioners actually did a really good job of pushing on this topic and ended up getting TC Energy to agree to pay for almost the entire replacement of that, or, you know, surfacing.
Significant overlay.
Yeah, of that road. So that was fantastic because it was not in prime condition in Kansas, and in Nebraska it was even worse. But they're kind of fighting their own battle up there. But, yeah, that's a lot of truckloads to bring that debris away.
So now the people are starting to leave, but the sales tax dollars lag about 2 months behind. This has been a significant event for sales tax dollars in Washington County. And of course, anybody that ever talks to the Department of Revenue, it's purposely built so you don't know who's paying sales tax. I mean, that's how the whole system is built. And you had mentioned you've got other projects in the county too. Let's hit those one more time.
Yeah, and it was hard to decide what applies to what, since, I mean, obviously this oil spill and 900 personnel on there has to have the biggest impact on our sales tax. But a bridge being totally rebuilt just south of town, and Highway 36 being reconstructed through town, and then a significant amount of construction traffic as a result of the wind farm to the west, all of those going on the exact same time. But when you look at the numbers, and I kind of went on the Kansas Department of Revenue's website to just track our sales tax, and it peaked in April at $1.158 million of sales tax collected.
In 1 month.
In 1 month. And
now,
compare.
Now, yeah, compare that to the April the year before.
$47,000.
To $1.1 million.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of the big, oh my, what just happened here? And what do we, obviously that came up with a lot of, ooh, what are we going to do with that? And, you know, I think there's still a lot of wait and see because of the unforeseen expenses related to this. But it really kind of started jumping in February. If we were averaging anywhere from the high 40s to the low 60s per month in the county, it jumped to 93,000 in February and then 171 in March before that 1.1 million. And it's been almost 10 times normal ever since, including October, $507,000 in sales tax compared to last October of 47,000. So we're over 10 times the amount in sales tax collected. And the city has had an impact as well, but because of the location of the site, the sales tax applies more to the county than the city.
Yeah, good point. It's you had done some calculation here. I think your number is 3.78 million in 2023, or is that?
Yeah, that's year to date in 2023.
Yeah.
Which is a 614% increase over the same year to date in 2022.
Now, there's people in metro areas, you know, going, well, that's nothing. We do that in 1 month. But to rural counties like Washington County and like most of them listening here, I mean, that's enough money to do something with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we're number, so I went in April with that $1.1 million and compared it to where that puts us with the big city counties. Obviously, Johnson County leading the group, but then Sedgwick, Shawnee, Wyandotte, Douglas, Saline, and then Washington County.
You were fourth?
We were seventh.
Seventh,
so,
okay.
But all of those are the big cities in Kansas. And
you
so,
were seventh.
And it even puts us, you know, like ahead of Hayes. And so it's like, how's that happen? Well, have an oil spill.
Well, and I assume they probably bought some things in town that there was local merchants that that were able to sell some things.
Yeah, it was there. That impact was huge and noticeable. And they tried, because we encouraged them right from the start, whether it was our county commissioners or whoever, everyone encouraged them, while you're here, buy local, that'll help. So the restaurants, convenience stores, grocery stores, hardware stores, everyone was impacted by it. The real impact, though, came from rental sales tax on rentals of the big machinery, because in Kansas, the sales tax is applied to the county where the rental happens. So you start thinking about all of those excavators, dozers, and everything that's showing up out there at the site. All of those have a sales tax, and they were applied to the county.
You know, I don't know your EMS director there. I assume he helped direct this early on. Or who was it that called out the county trucks and the dump trucks? How did that
work? So Randy Hubbard is that guy, and he has been involved throughout this entire process, and has worked basically as an in-between with them and the county. Also, our public works department's been very involved because of the roads and all that sort of situation. So I'd say those two are the closest. And then county commissioners have been kept up to date on it pretty well as well.
Now, your public works department, do they have to recoup all their costs of doing this through sales tax, or did they get reimbursed?
No, they were reimbursed. So everyone who did anything out there from some sort of county level situation was able to keep some sort of tally of expenses associated, and then they would be reimbursed. At least that was the agreement, and that was all part of the agreement that they created with the
situation. A lot of EMS are used to doing that because of reimbursement from the federal in case of other natural things, so they're used to immediately starting to tabulate that cost. And I guess that's one thing we would encourage any other ones listening out here is keep track of costs.
Yep, man hours, that sort of thing. It happened even if it's like a tornado or something like that. That's one thing they start you doing right away.
In general, would you feel that the community is coming away from this with a positive thought about TC or not?
Yeah, so absolutely. One of the nice stories that came out of this, and this was really early, you know, it happened in mid-December, and it was really cold after that. And one of the local, well, a couple of locals with a church got involved and did a cookie drive for them and provided cookies to all these workers who were going to miss Christmas with their families because they were out there working. So they brought out boxes and boxes of cookies for them at their, you know, catering tent out there. And they sure appreciated that. They've been great about, they've donated to the hospital foundation, to our food pantry lately. So I think they're above $300,000 in just goodwill donations to our community. And the economic impact has been huge, so people appreciate that part too. There's been kind of the ongoing joke of feel free to have an oil spill every year or two, just try to do it away from a creek next time, because it's been a really good and positive thing. And that didn't always match the national headlines. You know, we had several, we got to see lots of that headline-y thing that was like, oh, this is the most devastating thing ever. But the up close, you know, reality of it was like, of course it was bad, but they have done a fantastic job. Almost like, you know, next late winter, we'll start talking about soil conservation issues and sort of like that. This is, it looks like a really big recovery operation for erosion control along a creek that we see all the time. Mm-hmm. So they have done such a good job of going in, cleaning everything up, and then repairing it back to as close to they could as possible for restoration purposes. And it just looks like something we've seen before, and it'll be totally usable and totally natural here soon.
That is Dan Thalman. He is the owner and publisher of the Washington County News. We have been going over play-by-play for the last year of the Keystone Pipeline rupture and the spill recovery afterwards. Thank you, Dan, for being my guest today.
Appreciate being here.
And this has been On the Front Porch.